It's from Judges chapter 3, verses 15 to 23. Judges 3, verses 15 to 23. Again, the Israelites cried out to the Lord, and he gave them a deliverer, Ehud, a left-handed man, the son of Gera the Benjamite. The Israelites sent him with tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Now Ehud had made a double-edged sword about a foot and a half long, which he strapped to his right thigh under his clothing. He presented the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab, who was a very fat man. After Ehud had presented the tribute, he sent on their way the men who had carried it. At the idols near Gilgal, he himself turned back and said, "I have a secret message for you, O king." The king said, "Quiet," and all his attendants left him. Ehud then approached him while he was sitting alone in the upper room of his summer palace and said, "I have a message from God for you." As the king rose from his seat, Ehud reached with his left hand, drew the sword from his right thigh, and plunged it into the king's belly. Even the handle sank in after the blade, which came out his back. Ehud did not pull the sword out, and the fat closed in over it. Then Ehud went out to the porch. He shut the doors of the upper room behind him and locked them.
Yes, and now some of you are saying, what's he going to do with this? If I said the name Mark Hamill, what do you think of when I say the name Mark Hamill? Star Wars, right? Luke Skywalker. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Now, think of it this way. Think of Mark Hamill and think of another movie or another role that is not Star Wars. You probably can't think of one because, you know, in Hollywood they have this whole thing they call the Mark Hamill syndrome, where what happened was he's in this movie and it's the role of a lifetime to play the hero Luke Skywalker. He had like a small portion of the gross of this thing, you know, which of course would be millions. He's got money, he's got fame and all this stuff. But there's a downside to being in a mega hit like Star Wars. You know what that is? He's typecast. He's pigeonholed now. I mean, it's like the public said, "Mark, you can play any role in Hollywood you want as long as it's Luke Skywalker." And it just killed his career. So on the one hand, it made his career, it defined his career, but on the other hand, it was his career, and that was all he ever had. So he became typecast, and he became limited. We don't know the scope of what he was able to do because he was never able to break out of that little tiny box. Now, the interesting thing is that I believe that all of us have the propensity to want to typecast God, to pigeonhole God and put God in a box that says, "God, this is who you are and this is how you function." And we get uncomfortable thinking that God functions outside this box, that God functions differently than what we have come to expect. And you know the evidence that I have for this? The best example I have is when Jesus was on the earth. Because Jesus used to say, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." What's true of God the Father was true of Jesus, and yet Jesus wasn't anything what they expected. He blew all these stereotypes. The woman who is the woman of ill repute, the prostitute, has had this encounter with Jesus. We don't know anything about it. We're not told. She meets with Jesus. And later, Jesus is at this dinner party, and it's a nice occasion, it's pleasant, and everything's going swimmingly, and she enters into the room. She's standing over Jesus. Jesus is reclining. They didn't sit like we are now, but they reclined on an elbow. And as she is standing over Jesus, the tears roll down her face. They fall off her jaw, and her tears began to land on the feet of Jesus. And about this time, the other dinner guests are like, "What's going on here? Hey, Jesus, we kind of thought you were a prophet. You were kind of a godly man. What have you been doing, hanging out with this woman? How do you know this woman?" And then it gets even worse. As the tears are now falling off her face onto Jesus' feet, she kneels down and she takes her hair and she begins to wipe and wash the feet of Jesus. And everybody's saying, We thought you were a good guy. We thought you were from God. We were obviously wrong. Jesus wasn't what they expected. They mocked Jesus and said, "You're a friend of sinners. You hang out with all the wrong people." And Jesus heard that and said, "Yeah. Yeah, I'm a friend of sinners. You can call me that." Then you have these enterprising people at the temple who are just trying to make a little bit of money, and Jesus takes this whip, drives them out, turns over their tables. He has a tirade, and they're like, "What's with that, Jesus?" A tiny little box. And I said, "This is how God functions. This is what God's like." And Jesus came and he just blew it away. And in the end, as a result of that, there were a lot of people, they looked at Jesus, and you know what they said? "You're not of God. It couldn't be of God." Because God was operating in Jesus outside what their perception was, what they thought God was like, in the end, the saddest thing was they missed it. They missed what God was trying to do. They missed what Jesus was about because he operated outside of their narrow confines, outside of their typecast. Is that true for us? So let me ask the question. What is your perception of God? What's your understanding of who God is and how he's working? What is God doing? What is he doing in your life? What is God trying to say to you? And is it possible that God is at work and he's working in a way that's outside the parameters that you expect or that you're comfortable with? That's what we're going to look at this morning. We're going to ask the question about how do we understand God and what God is doing? And we have this really unusual passage to think about it. The story of Ehud from Judges. Some of you have never heard this story. Some of you, if you read it, you would be like, "Is that in the Bible?" You know, it's like, really? That, you know, it's graphic, it's kind of crude, and you think, man. And you say, "What's with that?" And it really, it's this whole thing that we've been talking about. We've got this little box, and we're like, "Well, that can't be in the Bible, can it? A story like that?" The story itself breaks the parameters. It blows away our little box and it says, "Man, I didn't really think a story like that would be in the Bible." Well, it is. Deal with it. Now we got to figure out what's it telling us. First thing it tells us is that there's more to God than what we really understand. As we are going to be working through Judges, we're going to see that there's a pattern of what happens is Israel, just the people of Israel, they get off track. They lose their way and they begin to chase after a direction away from God. As a result of that, sin, it opens the door for all sorts of problems. And in this case, their problem comes in the name of a guy named Eglon, king of Moab. The Moabites come in. You see this as you read in verses 12 through 14. Here it gives the setting of what we're about to see. Let me read it. "Once again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And because they did this evil, the Lord gave Eglon, king of Moab, power over Israel." Did you see that? First thing I want you to realize, the Lord gave Eglon power. This is something God is doing. And you're saying, "Man, can God use kind of evil, corrupt people like Eglon for his purposes?" Yeah. God gave him that power. God gave him that power as a form of discipline of his people to say, "Hey, you're going the wrong way. You need to straighten up." An interesting thing, it says he's getting the Amorites and the Amalekites to join him. Eglon came and attacked Israel, and they took possession of the city of Palms. That's Jericho, city that famous for Joshua taking. Now they had lost it because they had lost their way. They had deviated. God gave Jericho, which was once a monument to God's power, now it's in the hands of Eglon. And the Israelites were subject to Eglon, king of Moab, for 18 years. So 18 years, they're going to be disciplined. For 18 years, they're going to be under the rule of this man. And it's after 18 years, verse 15 says, again, the Israelites cried out to the Lord, and he gave them a deliverer. He gave them Eglon. Now he's giving them Ehud. This is how God's working, okay? Ehud, a left-handed man. Now, let me just say a few things. We're going to talk for about our two characters here, Eglon and Ehud. This is not Zane Grey when you read the Bible. You know, it's interesting, like when I ask people, it's like, what's the Apostle Peter look like? Do you realize that nowhere in the Bible are we given a description of what Peter looks like? Some people have portrayed him with red hair because this is fiery, but we really don't know. I mean, most of the people in the Bible, we don't really know what they look like. It's not the Hebrew way to sit there and talk about it. So whenever you're reading something and they start giving a physical description, you better look closely because it's giving you a physical description for a good reason. And both these characters, we get physical descriptions. With Ehud, I'll talk about him first. We're told he's left-handed. Let's see a sign. All the lefties here. Let's see. Wow. Yeah, pretty good group. See, we all know that lefties are aberrant people, right? I married one, so. Now, being left-handed was a little bit of an oddity. It was a little unusual. And the thing about this left-handedness, it's not just that he didn't use his right hand, it's suggesting something about the person, what Ehud's like. He's a bit of a crafty guy. He's a little bit deceptive. He's not all that he appears to be. We're going to find out more about him. So, but this thing that he's left-handed is going to be important to the story. We're going to find that out later. The other thing, then, when we talk about Eglon, it tells us the description. It says he was fat. And it didn't just say that he's fat, it says he was very fat. The Bible doesn't use the word very often. It's very conservative in how it uses that word. When we talked about Bathsheba and David saw Bathsheba, it didn't say she was beautiful, it said she was very beautiful. Doesn't do that often. And in this case, it is not a good thing. He wasn't just fat. He was very fat. Now, it's going to come into play later in the story, but again, it's suggesting something about his character. Who is this man, Eglon, who is now ruling, who is lording over the people of Israel? Who is he? He's self-indulgent. He is controlled by his appetites. He's corpulent. He's a slob. And this is what they have gotten because they have walked away from God. Remember Bob Dylan had the song, "You Gotta Serve Somebody"? And the children of Israel said, "We don't want to serve you, God." And God said, "That's okay, you can have Eglon." After 18 years, they're like, "Lord, we want you back! We're not so happy with Eglon." And here's the thing that I want you to understand, is that when we choose to walk away from God, when we choose to say, "God, I don't want you to be the master in my life," when we choose to do that, we begin to invite the Eglons of this world into the mastery over us. We allow Eglons to rule our lives. And it's very, very tragic. Remember the story Jesus told the prodigal son? He goes to his father and he says, "Dad, I'm tired of living under your roof. You're cramping my style. I want to be my own man." And what's worse is he says, he doesn't want to leave. He goes, "I want my inheritance and I want it now," which is like saying, "I wish you were dead." Father says, okay, gives him his inheritance. He goes off, he blows it. You know what he ends up? Here's a young Jewish boy who's been taught pigs are unclean. You know where he ends up? He ends up at a pigsty. Waist deep in mud and pig excrement because he said, "I do not want to live under my father's house." And so he ends up in the pigsty. That was his Eglon. Until he gets that point where he says, the servants in my dad's house do better than this. I can't put up with this anymore. I hate this master. And he decides to go back. I remember talking to a young woman, attractive, talented young woman. She had walked away from the life that God would call her to, and she'd allowed heroin to become master in her life, and it controlled her. She said one day she was out, and it was nighttime. She had had a hit, and she was high, and she couldn't remember much. She had lost consciousness, but she woke up, and she had been in it. She found herself in an auto bin. Someone had opened the top, had picked her up, and had dumped her in to the place where she was fearful that she was going to get picked up and taken out like trash because she could not get herself out. I talked to her, and the tears ran down her face, and she said, they treat me like I'm just rubbish. I'm just a piece of trash. It's all I am. She said, I hate my life. Here was Eglon, the hideous ruler, master of her life. And she was like, I hate it. Let me add one more thing here. It's important. The name Ehud. The name Ehud actually literally means, where is the majesty? Where is the splendor? Looked around at their world. They looked around at the life that God had promised them, and He'd promised them all these blessings, and then they've got Eglon. That was their life. And Ehud comes along, and it's like, where's the majesty? Where's the splendor? Where's the glory? And the answer is, it's all gone, and all we've got left is Eglon. You know, maybe some of you are in that place where all you've got right now is Eglon, and you're saying, where's the beauty? Where's the goodness? Where's the decency? People get caught up in pornography. They get wrapped up in this, and it becomes an Eglon in their life, something ugly and something hideous that just takes control. And you say, where's the beauty? Where's the goodness? For some of us, it may be just this materialistic ride of just wanting more and just pursuing more and more. And it looks beautiful, but it's Eglon. It has a mastery in your life. It's controlling you. And it's ugly. Maybe some of you are saying, where is the goodness and the beauty and the decency in my life? Maybe you're saying, where is the Ehud? Well, let's look at the story. As we see in verse 15, what's going to happen is there's going to be a tribute that gets paid. This gets paid every year. I want you to note, this is so much money and so many nice things that they give to Eglon, because they serve Eglon. He's now their master, that it takes a party of people. It's not just Ehud is part of the group that is going to give this tribute, but there's a lot of others, so it's a big tribute. And what happens is that it says the Israelites sent him with a tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Verse 16, now Ehud had made a double-edged sword about a foot and a half long, which he strapped to his right thigh underneath his clothing. Remember Ehud? He's a little bit of a crafty fellow. Now, normally, if you were going to frisk somebody, if someone was of a danger, they would keep their sword here on their left because they're right-handed, and a warrior would reach over and to remove a sword from its sheath, you would have it over here and you would do that. So if they were going to frisk you, they'd go here. Ehud, we're already told, he's left-handed. He has a double-edged sword that's about 18 inches long. He hides it on his right thigh because he is now left-handed under the clothing. But we're told this information, and there's tension as the story's being told. We're told this information, and we're thinking, oh, maybe something's going to happen here. Verse 17 says, he presented the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab, and then we're told who was very fat. After Ehud had presented the tribute, he went on their way, the men who had carried it, at the idols near Gilgal, which is near the Moabite and the Moab border to Israel. It's at that border that he himself turns back and says, I have a secret message for you, O king. So he goes back and he tells the king, I've got this special word. And the word there where message, it could mean anything. It's a Hebrew word that could mean, I have something I want to give you. I have a gift. It's really the English translation is probably the best. I have something for you. You don't know what it is, but I've got something. From here on, this whole passage is full of irony. You know what irony is? Something looks one way, but it's just the opposite. And so Eglon here becomes a servant to his own greed. He is so consumed, he's got such a big ego, and here Ehud comes, says, I got something for you. He's like, what is it? I can't wait. Give me more. Look what we see here in verse 20. Ehud then approached him while he was sitting alone in the upper room of his summer palace and said, he adds even now, I have a message. I have something from God for you. It's something from God. Well, give it to me. I'd love to have it. I can never get enough. That's what Eglon's like. He becomes a victim of his own avarice, his own greed. And so you imagine he gets up. It says he rises and he comes closer. He's like, yeah, I want it. And Ehud's like, yeah, closer. This is from God for you. Left hand pulls out this knife, puts it in his stomach. You know, the interesting thing is he thought, hey, this is going to be something good. It wasn't good for him. The story gets even a little bit more bizarre. But with reason, it all has a purpose. Verse 22, even the handle sank in after the blade which came out his back, and Ehud didn't pull the sword out, and the fat closed over it. In the end, we get a picture of a man consumed by his own greed and appetite. And then it tells us that Ehud went out on the porch and he shut the door of the upper room behind him and locked him. And after he had gone, the servants came and found the door of the upper room locked. And they said, he must be relieving himself in the inner room of the house. He's using the loo. You know why they thought he's using the loo? Because there's a terrible stench coming from behind those doors. But it is not the stench of a man relieving himself, it's the stench of a man who is dying or dead. Again, it's not a sign of life, it's a sign of death. It's the irony of the story. And you say, why is this here? Because ultimately we see in verse 24, go down to 25, they waited to the point of embarrassment, and when he did not open the door of the room, they took a key, unlocked them, and they saw their Lord fall to the floor dead. And while they waited, Ehud got away. See, it's important to understand that this whole deception is important so that Ehud can escape. He gets back, and look in verse 28. He says, follow me, for the Lord has given Moab, your enemy, into your hands. You know what God wants for you? He wants you to be free. This is what God wanted all along. Now let's take it. And after 18 years of living under Eglon, they finally agreed, we're sick of Eglon. We're sick of being slaves. And they rose up and they defeated the Moabites the way God had called them to in the first place. And it says they had peace and rest for 80 years, the longest of any of the periods of rest in Judges. Now, having heard all this, you kind of say, how could God act this way? How could God be in this? There are two unexpected instruments in this story. One is Eglon. God used Eglon. hideous, repulsive, horrible Eglon. It may be there's an Eglon in your life right now, something very unpleasant, and you know what it's trying to do? God is trying to use that to get your attention and to drive you back to Him. The point is, are you hearing it? Are you getting it? Or are you just putting up with it and going, living with your Eglon day after day after day? You know, the other instrument that God uses is an Ehud. And you know, the thing about Ehud is, Ehud's not what you think. He's this left-handed assassin. He's not the good guy in, you know, the knight in shining armor. He's kind of a tricky guy. And you think God uses that? Yeah, God uses things that we don't expect. And yet God uses these unconventional things, these surprising things to speak to us and to draw our attention back to Him as well. So maybe there's an Ehud in your life. Something that you don't expect. It's interesting, when I was thinking about this passage, I remembered the story about a woman named Nian Chin. She wrote a book called Life and Death in Shanghai, and she talked about the fact that she was there, and she had worked with Shell Oil Company, and she had had quite a bit to do with these Western companies and been educated in the West, had an understanding of the God of the Bible, had an understanding of Christianity, but was not really a believer, didn't really have a faith. The Cultural Revolution began to spring up, and they were attacking all the people who had Western kind of influence and had been Western educated. And she said, I could feel the walls of the circle just closing in on me. And one day, the Red Guard showed up at her house to arrest her, trashed the place, destroyed it looking for evidence, threw her in prison. The whole time they're beating her, they're ripping at her clothes, and they're spitting on her saying, confess, confess, you're a dirty spy, you're a dirty spy. She's thrown in a prison cell. Let me read. She was taken to this prison, locked in a small damp cell. A single light bulb burned 24 hours a day. The bed and the walls were just caked with dirt. Weeks passed. Nian dreamed of freedom. She was reading the works of Mao, looking for passages she could use against her accusers. Then one day, an encouragement came from an unlikely source. Nian gazed out her tiny window, and a pea-sized spider crawled through the rusty bars and climbed toward the ceiling. Suddenly, the spider swung out on a silken thread and attached the strand to the base of the bar, and then spun another, then another, and worked with purpose and confidence, weaving a web of intricate beauty. Nian says, I had just watched an architectural feat by an extremely skilled artist. My mind was full of questions. Who had taught the spider to make a web? Could it have really acquired the skills through evolution, or did God create the spider and endow it with the ability to make a web so it could catch food and perpetuate its species? I knew I had just witnessed something that was extraordinarily beautiful and uplifting, and for the first time, I was beginning to wonder whether God had made the spider. I thank God for what I had just seen. And it helped me to see that God was in control. Looking at this tiny spider, she writes, Mao and his revolutionaries seemed much less menacing, and I felt a renewal of hope and confidence. Here's this woman, an intellectual, and you think, what would it take to reach her? Maybe some book, maybe some academic, maybe some man who had studied at Oxford or something, and yet it's this tiny little spider who lifts her sights and directs her toward God. This was the beginning of her journey of faith. She would spend the next decade in prison, and yet this was the beginning of a faith that became real to her, that tiny little spider. There are so many stories that I could tell you about that kind of thing where God works in the most unusual, the most unlikely ways, and yet that's how big our God is. And we want to put Him in a tiny little box, and yet you come back to the Scriptures, you come back to what God is doing, and He's so much bigger than all that. So here's the question. What is God using in your life? How is God working in your life? What is God saying to you? Is it an Eglon? Is it an Ehud? But are you hearing it? Are you listening? Are you getting it? Because this passage reminds us that God acts in unexpected, unconventional ways to display His glory. You know, another way of saying that, God acts in these unexpected ways to turn us back to Him. What is God saying to you? What is God using in your life? Maybe something unpleasant. Maybe something unlikely. The point is, are you hearing God? Are you allowing your attention and your focus to be turned to what God wants for you? Some of you have heard me talk about this family that I met years ago in Georgia called the Burnhams. I remember sitting around the table with them on a Sunday noon, and we were having a meal, and it was the whole family was around them, and they have a young girl. She was about 12 at the time. Her name was Beth. Beth had mental handicaps, mental deficiencies. Lovely, sweet young girl. Simple faith in God. She was always going to struggle. And yet they talked about what a blessing she was in the family and how God was always bringing things to her. And they gave me an example. They said, one day we were out climbing in North Carolina. We were climbing up Grandfather Mountain. And as we were thinking, oh, if we can only get to the top before the sun goes down. And that's their goal. So they all hurried and they moved quickly. And Beth was along with them and helping her and pushing along and pushing themselves hard. They got to the top before the sun had set. And they saw the beautiful orange skies and the red against the clouds. And they were just all reveling in it. They were talking about the beauty of what they were seeing, and they were focused upon their pain. They were a little bit winded, they were a little bit sore, but they were thinking, isn't this great? And it was worth it. And as they're all commenting about the beauty of the sky, there was Beth, and she's the one who was the first one to say, isn't this beautiful? Let's give God a hand. And so they looked at each other and said, Beth, you're right. This is what God has done. And there they were on the top of Grandfather Mountain, giving a clap to God. They all were focused on different things and they were enjoying the beauty of it, but it took Beth to be the Ehud to say, hey, let's turn our attention back to God. What is God saying to you? Are you hearing it? Giving it your attention? You see, God acts in unexpected ways to turn our focus back to Him. Don't miss it. Don't miss what He might say. Would you bow with me in prayer? Your heads are bowed and you're thinking about your own life. Who is God using in your life? Or maybe it's a what. What is God using? Who or what is God using in your life right now to get your attention? And what is it that God is trying to say to you? Maybe it's an Eglon, it's something unpleasant. Maybe it's an Ehud, something unlikely. The big question is, are you listening? The danger is God's speaking and he's working and you're missing it. And that would be a shame. Think about what God is trying to do and say to you right now. Father, you are so much greater than what we imagine. And your word tells us you can do more than we can even dream of. Father, you bring people, circumstances, and things into our lives. And we just see them as objects or as people, and we miss the fact that you're actually trying to say something to us. Lord, may we see your majesty and your glory, and may we hear from you in the things that we encounter. And Lord, may we recognize your goodness, your beauty, your life. Father, thank you for the story. It's kind of difficult, but it tells us something about you and how you work. And Lord, may we hear it and may we obey. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. You have a card.